Hey, yo, what is a cipher?
Tonight I want to wreck a poom poom.
The knowledge of the cipher is to enlighten you.
Where you think the cipher come from? The gods.
Because you tried to jump the cipher and it goes this way.
Ho, ho, ho. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas and welcome to The Cipher, a weekly podcast bringing you talks with the most interesting figures in hip-hop and culture. I'm your host, Sean Sotero. This is episode 181, the 2016 edition of our annual Christmas Jollies episode with Bill Adler. Bill was the head of publicity at Def Jam during its key early years and has gone on to a distinguished career as a writer, gallery owner, archivist, and much more. But that's not why you or we are here. More than any of those things, Bill Adler is a Christmas music nut. He has put together a mixtape of his favorite soulful Christmas music called Christmas Jollies every year since 1982. Since its humble beginnings, the mix has become famous, going out to a mailing list of hundreds and getting press all around the world, including, most recently, a feature about Bill and the Christmas Jollies mix in the New York Times that ran this past December 1st. As we have every holiday season since 2013, we sat down with Bill Adler to talk about this year's edition of the Christmas Jollies and a bunch of other stuff as well.
Hey, it's Josh, producer of The Cipher, and if you've been listening over the month of December, you know that we've been sponsored by Meze Headphones. They sent Sean and I a few pairs of their flagship model, the 99 Classics, to test out, and after using them for a month, I can confidently say they are the best-sounding pair I've ever owned. I own a ton of different sets of cans, and it's been weeks since I've reached for anything else when I wanted to listen to music. These have replaced anything else as my default listening set. If you want more information, you can go to meze.thecyphershow.com. That's meze.thecyphershow.com to find out more information about the company and the headphones. And thanks for supporting us.
Unless you're lucky enough to be on Bill's mailing list, our SoundCloud page is the only place you'll find this year's mix. Head over to our SoundCloud page at soundcloud.com/thecyphershow. If you're curious about any of the songs we're playing during this episode, visit thecyphershow.com to find a complete list and the show notes. While you're there, sign up for our monthly newsletter to stay on top of what we're up to, on the air and in the wider world. And now, here's the biggest Jewish Christmas nut this side of Jesus, Bill Adler. Glad to have you here for our annual Christmas chat.
This is Christmas for me, this very day.
Wow, that's it's big stuff. I'm glad you could make it now that you're a big big famous star. You got your own documentary.
Oh, God. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. How did that whole thing come about? This is the Too Old to Die Young. It's maybe 10, 15-minute movie that came out, what, about a month ago?
I'm Bill Adler. I like sunshine. I'm a music lover. I was born in Brooklyn, New York. I grew up in Detroit. I went to school in Ann Arbor. I spent a little bit of time in Boston. And I've been in New York continuously since July 1st, 1980.
Yeah, this was a funny little thing. So in 2015, I sold my collection of hip-hop photos to this African-American museum in D.C. that hadn't yet opened up. But I concluded the sale then. And my son, Sam Adler, 26 years old, 25 at the time, was impressed on behalf of his father, which is very sweet. He's got a filmmaker friend named Clark Slater. And the two of them said, look, let's do a story. Let's make a short movie about this collection going to the National Museum of African American History and Culture. Before it leaves your premises, before these photos leave your house for Washington, let's see the collection and let's paint a portrait of you as a collector. So that's what happened. You know, we shot the footage, almost all of it, you know, in the summer of 2015. And then I had to beat the hell up out of Clark to finish it in time for the opening of the museum this past fall, namely in September, because, you know, then it was public.
Right.
The collection would be public. And so that's what we did. And I decided to call it Too Old to Be Young because that's the way I've been thinking about myself for quite a while. I turned 65 this month, and it's not as if I haven't been old for a while, but 65 is kind of messing with my head just a little bit. And in any case, you know, really what goes, you know, it's kind of a variation on a thought, a riff that was prevalent when I was younger. And it's, you know, kind of super romantic, and it predates my youth. And you know, the notion is the glorious thing is to live fast, die young, and leave a pretty corpse.
What's in my blood? Who cares? Live fast, die young, have a good-looking corpse.
It's much, much too late for me to do any of that, right? So I'm now too old to die young. And having said that, you know, so that's the negative side of it, I suppose. The positive side is that, you know, in my own little life, you know, I've adopted a new slogan, which is live long, stay creative. And that, I think, is, you know, the thrust, so to speak, of this little movie.
It's great. There's some moments in it where people really get to see you in your element at a flea market.
You know, when I'm out flea marketing, the world drops away.
What's up? What do you need?
Tell me what's new.
That whole box.
This one?
In the box in back of it. Those four in the front, but those two especially.
You know what I mean?
As someone who's seen you record shopping, I can attest that's definitely like
accurate.
A whole other side. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
What makes a good flea market?
Books and records and magazines, postcards, paper mostly, and music. That's what I look for. And I'm not distracted by, you know, the other things that are available there. You know, I'm not distracted by jewelry and clothing and houseware and whatever other things, you know, appeal to some other folks.
Are there good flea markets left, I guess I should say, in the city?
Well, there are a couple good flea markets.
I'm not asking where they are. I'm not trying to get you to give up the location.
You know what? I don't mind. I'm not competitive about it. You know, I've got a kind of I don't want to get too philosophical here, but I do think I have a kind of cosmic perspective about it all. I'm not competing with anybody. You know, when I get to the flea market, I'm going to find what I find. And if somebody grabs something 10 minutes earlier that I might have loved, you know, easy come, easy go, I'm not worried about it. I will find, you know, an item or two usually that pleases me to buy for a couple bucks, and I'll take it home. So having said that, you know, there was a time when I, you know, first moved to the city 35 years ago, there were a lot more flea markets, but that's because the real estate was a lot less expensive then. And now there are two flea markets here in the city that I go to probably every weekend. And one is the Hell's Kitchen Flea Market on West 39 between 9th and 10th Avenues. And then there's another one, and I should know what the name of it is, but I don't even know if it has a name. But it's on West 25th Street between 6th Avenue and Broadway. And that's a very good one as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
And like you said, the movie's about your collection of photographs from when you owned the art gallery.
Bill owned the iJammy Fine Arts Gallery in Manhattan for 4 years, ending in 2008. It was devoted to hip-hop imagery and had photography and art exhibits for many contributors, including Ricky Powell and Martha Cooper. As Bill mentioned, much of the iJammy collection was sold to the brand new Smithsonian National Museum of African American History and Culture.
Oh, you know what? Can we just add this one thing?
Sure.
If anybody who wants to see that little film, Too Old to Die Young, can go to the Washington Post website, and you'll find it there.
And we will link to it in the show notes for this episode.
Oh, good.
So anyone who is listening can see it. What was it like going to D.C. for the opening of the museum? There was sort of a whole couple-day-long thing right around the opening.
Well, sure. I mean, the rollout has been extensive. You know, you could say it's still going on. I mean, there's so much excitement about the opening of this new museum that, you know, as I understand it, you know, regular citizens just can't get in until the new year. The thing is essentially sold out until the new year. And, you know, I had a chance, you know, because I'd contributed this collection, and I was able to go a week early for a preview. And, you know, like just about everybody else, I was stunned by how magnificent it was. You know, that it starts with the beauty of the building itself, because it's a thing unto itself. You know, it's pretty unique. And it would be unique in any case, but it's particularly unique because of the way, because it's placed on the National Mall, you know, along with, you know, the Washington Monument and everything else. And that stuff in some has a particular look to it. You know, it's neoclassical or whatever it is. And this is much more modern, much more artful, and, you know, fairly stunning in context. And then you go inside and, you know, I think there must be at least five floors, maybe six floors, including the basement exhibits. And I did not see any of it. I didn't see all of it by any measure. You know, I had a couple of hours, and I spent them on the third and fourth floors. And that was mostly 20th century and 21st century stuff, including, a photo or two from my collection. But, you know, it's mostly 20th century African-American achievement in the arts. And that stuff was magnificent to me.
Yeah. What was it like to actually see your photos from your collection in the museum?
It's tremendously gratifying. You know, it's not, and by the way, you know, these aren't photos that I shot. These are photos shot right. by 60 or so photographers, you know, who were doing their work mostly in the 80s and the 90s and documenting hip hop at a time when there weren't a lot of folks paying attention to it. And so, you know, I happen to have been impressed by it, you know, as it was happening, which is why I began to collect it and exhibit it. But it's tremendously gratifying, you know, to have it endorsed in effect by this new National Museum of African American History.
And the too old to die young concept is being expanded a bit, right? What's going on with that?
Well, you know, in my advanced age, I'm in the position over and over again of having to create work for myself. I want to hire myself. And, you know, as I said, you know, this idea general, you know, I have a general respect for older folks who stay creative. And I thought, well, you know, so it's not just about me. Let me, you know, continue to work with my son and with Clark to produce a series of short films under that title, Too Old to Die Young. And also sometimes, maybe not every time, but it'll throw off a podcast as well. The films are going to be short. The interviews we conduct for the film are going to be longer. And so I'm thinking, well, why are we going to waste an hour-long interview? You know, because all we have is a 10-minute film. So there will be podcasts as well. And yes, it's going to be done in conjunction with the folks at Mass Appeal.
Nice. And the first one is already in the can. Can we say who it's with? It's not out yet, but been recorded.
Yeah, we just filmed Russell Simmons this very week. And it so happens that Mr. Simmons is going to turn 60 in 2017. Not that that makes a big difference. I mean, if he was only going to turn 59, I'd still want to talk to him. But Russell is one of those guys, you know.
He also looks younger than he did at 25, by the way.
He definitely does. And, you know, he's well aware of it and is proud of it. And if you give him, you know, half an inch, he'll talk to you for, you know, an hour about, you know, the benefits of yoga.
The first class I came out, I was so high. I was sitting there like, wow. And I thought, because it was so much relief, I thought maybe I won't be good at work, and maybe if I keep doing this, I'm going to lose all my money. What I know now is that only in the present. So, all the creativity came for seconds and flashes of presence. So the more you can expound on that, you can do twice as much in half the time now. So I take time every single day to meditate twice and go to yoga.
All good, Russ. But, you know, in fact, you know, he lived pretty hard then. He was a faithful and vocal devotee of angel dust at the time, which is just a miserable drug. It's basically a horse tranquilizer. And for some reason, he loved it and talked about it all the goddamn time. And, you know, whatever he got out of it, you know, that and, you know, endless nightlife, you know, beat the shit up out of him, I think, you know. And so, yes, you know, after 20 years of daily yoga, he does look much better now. Plus, he's a vegan. You go, Russ.
Yeah. And, you know, I saw you actually the other day. I was watching the documentary Hip Hop Evolution.
You can divide hip hop into kind of a BC and an AD with the invention of hip hop on wax.
on Netflix, and I saw both you and Russell and some of our past guests, Dan Charnas, Joe Schloss, people like that, are in it as well. How did they approach you?
I think the folks who made that it's a company in Canada called Banger Films. And they made other kind of hip-hop-oriented films. And I know that I've been interviewed by them at least once before. And so when they decided to do this thing, they called me again. And what am I going to do? Say no? I'm happy to talk.
Yeah. And it seems like there's been kind of a whole focus in TV and movies kind of on the sort of the early days of hip-hop. You know, you had this hip-hop evolution and the Get Down, and then focusing on a maybe, you know, decade later period of the early 90s. You know, you have the Breaks, you have Luke Cage. What's it been like to kind of see stuff you lived through appear in fictionalized form, appear in documentary form, kind of all at once back in pop culture?
Well, when it comes to the theatrical stuff, not the documentaries, but when it comes to the theatrical stuff, I wish I liked it better generally, you know, and my... You know, obviously, I'm delighted that it's a source of interest and, you know, that it's going to be recirculated in pop culture in this form. But, you know, mostly it doesn't knock me out quality-wise. But having said that, I want to talk about a series that's hip-hop-oriented that kills me. And I only just discovered it, and I'm a little late, but not terribly late. And that's Atlanta.
Hey, yo, you heard that new Paperboi mixtape?
That's my cousin.
You gonna wanna get in there before he gets signed, man.
So,
Zoo Tycoon.
You want in on Paperboi?
What? No?
Please, man.
And that's not something that looks back. That's contemporary. And it's just magnificent. And, you know, it so happens there's a hip-hop theme that runs through it, but it doesn't beat it to death. You know, the Donald Glover plays a guy who's a guy who manages rappers in Atlanta. And otherwise, he has a life. He has a baby mama. He has a daughter. He's got some friends. And there's something that's just so everyday about it. And so, you know, it's so intelligent and so funny, so well written, so well acted. I'm really knocked out by it from beginning to end. You know, I've never seen anything like it. And again, you know, the point I want to make is it can be slotted into the category of a hip-hop series. But I think the appeal of it is much broader than that. You know, I think of it on a par with any, you know, I understand everybody likes to suck up to television forever. I'm not, you know, television, okay. You know, I'm basically a hippie. Fuck TV, you know. I mean, in my life, there are things I've seen that I like well enough, you know. In relatively recent years, you know, I used to watch The Sopranos every damn Sunday night and you know, be afraid to go to sleep at night. But I couldn't leave it alone, you know. So magnificent. And you know, there are a handful of other shows, series that I've seen that I loved. I would say that Atlanta, and maybe this is just, you know, my new infatuation, but it's as strong a television series as I've seen in the last half dozen years or so. Yeah. Compared to anything in any damn genre.
Yeah, it is. It's a phenomenal show. We talk about it a lot over here at HQ.
Oh, good. Very good.
Yeah. So obviously you're here at least in part to talk about Christmas music in your annual Christmas Jollies mix. You know, it makes sense to start at the beginning of the mix with the Pigmeat Markham tune.
That's not actually the beginning. The beginning.
The beginning is you.
I mean the man. The sensational. The incomparable. The dynamic.
Santa. Santa Claus. Well, the beginning is something I stole from a Bobby Bland record. You know, it's called Here's Bobby Bland.
Ladies and gentlemen, here's the man. I mean the man. The sensational. The incomparable. The dynamic Bobby Bland.
And it might have come out in 62 or so. And it's really great because, in effect, it's like a live intro to the record, but it was cut in a studio, and it's just, here he is, ladies and gentlemen, da 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 da, da. You know, it's just, you know, this great instrumental intro, and the announcer says, and here he is, Bobby Bland, and I just mutated it a little bit, and I slipped out Bobby's name and put Santa Claus's name in instead, and that's how we roll. And I'm happy to start that way. I will admit that I find it high energy.
Yeah, it's one of the only times I can remember in the past few years, maybe the only one, that your voice is on the thing.
That's right. I don't think I've ever done it before.
Yeah. But so the first full song on there is Pigmeat Markham.
Right.
Come on here, super, let's have a little heat. Chillin's in the pot with the smoked pig feet. Cornbread's ready, the collard greens done. Send up that steam, we're gonna have a little fun.
Come on, super, what's the matter with the steam? Stop drinking that peat, come on out of that tree. Whiskey's on the table and the beer's in the crock. Heat us up quick, cause we're waiting to rock.
Who is sort of this weird figure in that you hear him occasionally mentioned in terms of hip-hop because of a song he did much later, Here Come the Judge, which, right. You know, people will sort of say, oh, it's someone talking in rhythm over a breakbeat. It's sort of this proto-rap thing.
I'm gonna lay down the law. They better not budge. I bust some head because I am the judge.
He is the judge. He is the judge. Everybody knows that he is the judge.
And this song features some of that, too, of him and whoever the female vocalist is. Kind of, I don't want to call it rapping exactly, but talking in rhythm over a beat.
Well, he wasn't much of a singer per se. He wasn't a conventional singer. You know, he wasn't Billy Eckstein. But, you know, he was a vaudevillian.
The last time I was out with you, you were drinking gin.
That, gin?
Gin?
Man, you hit the nail on the head.
Drink gin, cause yeah. It ain't no sin.
It sure ain't no sin.
That's really where he started. You know, he started on the stage before, you know, he made records and television and all the rest of it. And really, he's a comedian. And having said all of that, you know, I heard that song. I'd never heard it before. It's not a Christmas song per se. It's a winter song. It's a cold weather song. And, you know, the energy knocked me out. I really was, you know, just delighted by it. And so, you know, I chose it. And also, you know, I'm going to make an appeal to your listeners. I've worked pretty hard to figure out who is the woman he's singing against or singing with. And, you know, you can look it up and you'll find it's credited to Moms Mabley, who also recorded for the same label and appeared on the same stages with Pigmeat. And I don't buy it. And I spoke to a researcher at the Schomburg Center here in the city to try and figure it out. And she listened to it, and she said, likewise, she didn't buy it. And so, to me, it's an open question. Good luck. You know, the song is called Let's Have Some Heat. It was cut in 1958. It's Pigmeat Markham, and to my way of thinking, an unidentified woman. And whoever can help us identify it as a hero.
Yeah, absolutely. One other thing about that song that caught my ear is he uses rock and roll as a verb in kind of the traditional blues sense as kind of a euphemism.
Safety valve jumped till she's ready to pop. We're going to rock and roll till it gets real warm. But what we're going to do won't be no harm.
Sure. Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, he's not talking about fucking, I don't think, you know, which is really what it goes back to. But it's just, you know, let's have a good time. Let's have a party.
Yeah.
So, yeah, exactly right.
Yeah, which is interesting because I think right around that time was when rock and roll songs by white groups started using it in a more sort of generic way to refer to music or partying or whatever.
Well, you can rock it, chop it, roll it, do the stop and even stroll it at the hop. When R-O-C-K rock it.
I guess it kind of caught my ear, the sort of blues connotation of rock and roll that they use in that song that sort of harkens back to that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that term was current in the black community going back to the 30s at a minimum and maybe to the 20s.
My man rocks me with one steady roll.
Satan starts to hang you, come into rock and roll. Get rhythm in your feet and music in your soul.
That's Pigmeat's era. You know, this is late in his life. You know, how old was he then? He was 54 years old when he cut this record.
Wow. So, yeah, so he had a whole career of, like you said, doing vaudeville and comedy.
Right.
Prior to that. You have the Santa Claus is skying to town, which is pretty funny. It's just kind of like exactly what it sounds like. Santa Claus is coming to town, but a ska version.
Santa Claus is skying.
from Granville Williams Orchestra, who wasn't able to find a ton about. I saw someone speculating that Ernest Ranglin, the guitarist who worked with Bob Marley and Jimmy Cliff, was part of the group, but that was just like someone claiming they were repeating an old news article. I have no idea if that's actually true. Do you know anything about
Granville Williams? I don't know much. I did a little bit of research. It seems to me that he is of the Caucasian persuasion. He is not a dark-skinned Jamaican individual, but he had a band and an orchestra, and he did a lot of recording at that time. And undoubtedly, he had a number of wonderful musicians in the band because the record's a smash to me, and beautifully recorded as well, which isn't always true of Jamaican records. And I think I used it. You know, I've got a rule. You know, if I can't fill up a given year's sequence with all songs that are new to me, I will sometimes go back and cherry pick something from an earlier year, but at least 10 years has to have passed before I reuse a given selection. And I know I've used this cut by Granville Williams once before, but it's, you know, whatever, 15 years ago. So I gave myself license to use it again.
Yeah. It fits in this kind of particular type of Christmas song, which is taking a well-known Christmas song and doing a relatively straight version of it, but kind of switching up the genre, which I like a lot.
Well, it was that moment in Jamaica when, actually it was a great, great moment, you know, in Jamaican history, including Jamaican musical history, because, you know, it's not long after independence and this local original form of music emerged called ska, before reggae, before rock steady, this music called ska. And, you know, it's been one of the great pleasures of my life in relatively recent years to investigate that era. And it's a rich, rich era, you know, a number, you know, hundreds and hundreds of wonderful recordings were made during that time. And this is just one of them.
Wow. And, you know, you have a Calypso singer on next, literally named Calypso Rose. And I know you had a little pretty direct contact with her, right?
Yeah, that's a great story. You know, so this is a track I think I just found, you know, puddling around on YouTube. And, you know, she's a powerhouse singer and the song is the tempo is upbeat and whatnot. And it's very seductive. And then, you know, I wanted to be able to date the track. When was it cut? You know, which is something I want to be able to do for every track. And I struck out and I wasn't ready to sit down yet. And so I called my friend Ralston Charles, better known as Charlie of Charlie's Calypso City in Brooklyn. And, you know, Charlie's been there. He's had a retail store in Bed-Stuy for 30 or 40 years. And then also for, I think, just about as long, if you go upstairs, he has a beautiful recording studio up there. And he's had a record label as well. And he's Trinidadian. And I thought, well, you know, and most of the records he's put out, or a lot of the records he's put out, are Calypso records. So I thought, well, Charlie, you know, maybe Charlie can help me date this. And so I asked him about it, and he said he didn't know. He's familiar with the song. He started to sing it, but he couldn't date it. And I said, Charlie, you know, I've been jumping around on Google trying to find discographies for individual Calypsonians and or, you know, the entire idiom of Calypso, and I'm striking out. I said, I don't get it. You know, for every other idiom in life, just about, if you go to discogs.com, you can find that kind of information. I said, man, I said, doesn't Calypso have something like this? And he sounded a little, well, I'm not quite sure what the word would be. He says, Bill, he says, we're not that organized. So I said, okay. And then, you know, he perked right up and he said, look, here's Calypso Rose's telephone number. Why don't you call her and ask her? And she happens to live, I think, in Queens, as does, for example, the Mighty Sparrow. I mean, not to say that they don't also have homes back in Trinidad, but I called Calypso Rose and I got a voicemail and I left a message and it was just, you know, Charlie gave me your telephone number. I'm looking for this information. Kindly call me back when you get a chance. And a month or more went by, and I never heard from her. And I figured, well, you know, she doesn't know me, even if Charlie says I'm all right. And she's not going to call me back. And so, okay, boom. And then after I'd given up hope, I get a call one night, and it's Calypso Rose. And she's the sweetest woman. She's now 76 years old, I think. And I told her about my quest. And she started to sing the song. And then she also could not remember just which year it was cut, but she said she was leaving for Trinidad the next day. This is, you know, 10 days ago. She was leaving for Trinidad, and she was going to do her best while she was there to figure out this question. And then when she got back to America, she was going to call me and tell me. And so I'm delighted. And maybe next year at this time, I can pass on that information to you. Because this year, you know, the Christmas Jollies does not know when that song was cut.
Right. I will probably butcher the title because my patois is embarrassing. But the Why You Gotta Gimme for Christmas is a great song and a little raunchy in its way.
Why you gotta gimme for Christmas? Gimme anything you can spare. Why you gotta gimme for Christmas? Help me have a happy day. Why you gotta gimme for Christmas? I need something from you. Gimme something for Christmas, boy, and I'll give you something too.
Where'd you come across that?
I think that's another one. The group is Satch Moore and the Sand Pebbles, and they're from Barbados. And, you know, again, that's one I found on YouTube, I think. Yeah, I think it's very, very funny.
Yeah, it's the narrator saying, like, oh, I keep running into this woman, and she offers sex in exchange for Christmas presents.
Exactly right. And he's very good humored about it.
Right. Yeah, It's a great tune. What are some of your other favorite, maybe that didn't make it on this year, some of your favorite kind of raunchier, naughtier Christmas songs?
Well, we talked about it last year. We talked about Wrecka Poom Poom.
Oh, Prince, yeah.
Prince Buster.
Right.
You know, and, you know, I'd put it on every damn year, except my wife would kick me out of the house. That's all. So
definitely that is high up there. Absolutely.
And it's not really a Christmas song, except that it's recorded to the tune of The Little Drummer Boy. Tonight I want to wreck a poom poom. All right, Prince Buster.
Amazing. I couldn't help but notice in a slightly more somber tone, you know, you have a song by Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings on there, her Hanukkah song.
Yeah.
Did you include that as a tribute to her? Or did you put it on before her passing?
I'm happy to say I put it on before she passed. And then, you know, she passed, I think, mid-November. And I had the sequence in order, you know, a month or more before that.
Did you know her at all?
I did not know her. Saw her perform once at the Apollo, and I was duly impressed. She was a powerhouse. And she made, you know, she and the band made a great Christmas record. It came out in 2015, I think. And I don't know how I had not paid any attention. I hadn't paid any attention to the Hanukkah song on it. That's the kind of terrible Jew I am. And my friend Amy Linden, who's a notable writer on musical subjects, pointed me in the direction of it. And I listened to it and was, you know, duly impressed by it and put it in. You know, it's an ongoing thing for me, you know, as a Jew, you know, I feel at least, I feel this kind of nagging shame that I'm even involved in this pursuit. I make, you know, I'm a Jew making a Christmas record every year. And so, you know, if and when I can, let me find a wonderful Hanukkah song to add to the mix. And it's not easy because...
Well, there's not many Hanukkah songs, period, to start with.
Right. And of those, you know, they're not a lot of great ones. You know, there's a funny riff, South Park put out a Christmas record once. And I don't even know if this is on the Christmas record, but they had a Christmas episode. And you have, you know, Kyle Broslovsky, who's Jewish, you know, talking about, you know, not even talking about Hanukkah, but he's singing the dreidel song. So he goes, I had a little dreidel, I made it out of clay, and when it's dry and ready, oh, dreidel, I will play. And then he goes, second verse, same as the first.
I had a little dreidel, I made it out of clay, and when it's dry and ready, with dreidel, I shall everybody dreidel.
Different dreidel, dreidel, dreidel,
dreidel,
dreidel,
I shall
play.
You know, that's the quality of things that we're dealing with. So Sharon Jones and her Jewish bandmates wrote a wonderful Hanukkah song, and it's on this year.
Yeah. So you said you'd had the track list in place well before Sharon's passing. When did you actually sort of start gathering music for this whole thing?
I do it all year long. You know, now happens to be, I've got, you know, pages of notes. This is the nerdiest shit in the world, so forgive me. You know, but I've got pages of notes for Christmas Jollies 2017 right now. You know, people are, you know, there are records that I couldn't use this year that I'm considering using for next year. But also, you know, I've got, there's an underground of weirdos who care about this, who and who know what I'm doing. And, you know, they're not all weirdos, or they are, but they're all friends and family. And they get in touch with me and they say, Bill, did you hear this song or did you hear that song? And, you know, so I take notes all year long and buy records, you know, all year long. And then come, you know, 10 minutes after Labor Day, I start to produce that year's Christmas Jollies.
Where's the strangest, maybe most obscure place you found a song that you ended up using this year?
You know, I don't know about strange. I'm just going to be open to it. So, you know, I'm open to possibility. You know, if I travel, you know, I'm going to hit the local record store or, you know, flea market and keep my eyes open for it. You know, I went to Paris and found a Christmas record I loved a lot. This year, this is something I'll do. My wife has been traveling a lot. She's got a new cookbook out. And she also has a television show. She's a chef. Her name is Sarah Moulton. And she was in Cajun country in Louisiana filming an episode for her, the next series of her cooking show on PBS.
If there's one place you can find the best food and incredible hospitality, it's here in Cajun country, Southwest Louisiana. I'm Sarah Moulton, and my mouth started watering the second I landed in Bayou country to go on a great culinary adventure.
And she was staying overnight in a city called Rayne, R-A-Y-N-E, Rayne, Louisiana. And I called her and I said, listen, Sarah, there's a great little record store. I went online. They have a great store right there in Rayne, probably within walking distance of your hotel. And you can go in there and look for me and blah, blah, blah. And she says, B, I've got work to do. Why don't you just call them yourself, you know? And she's right, of course. And so I called, and I ended up speaking to the proprietor. It's a woman named Christine Stelly. And she turns out to be the nicest person in the world. She runs a store called No Name Vinyl, right there in Rayne, Louisiana. And I told her about, you know, this project of mine. And she said she's got stacks and stacks of local 45s. And when I called, I said, you know, you're there in Louisiana. You know, I'm interested. You know, I imagine you're going to be strong in local artists there and local labels. And, you know, I'm looking for Christmas, you know, and you know, I'm interested in whatever you've got along those lines. And so she said she has all these 45s and she would just look through it, you know, at her convenience and get back to me. And she's been doing it all year long. She's just so fantastic. Is, you know, when she has time, she'll puddle through these stacks of 45s. And when she finds something, she takes a photo of the label and then sends it to me and says, Bill, is it, you know, you think this will fit? And so the answer is yes. Sometimes it definitely fits. So I've got two records on this year's Christmas Jollies that came from No Name Vinyl in Rayne, Louisiana. And one is by Rockin' Sidney.
Mm-hmm.
Rockin' Sidney played Zydeco music, and he had a giant hit in America with this little novelty called My Toot Toot in 1984.
Don't mess with my toot toot. Don't mess with my toot toot. Now you can have the other woman, but don't mess with my toot toot. When she was born.
So this was before that, so you got his pre-fame work on here.
Yeah, but I mean, it's in the same, I mean, I think he was recording probably going back to the 60s, but, you know, by the 80s, you know, what was so cool about My Toot Toot and the album it came from, by the way, was essentially, to me, it sounded like he was a one-man band. He had a drum machine, he'd record a beat and loop it, and then, you know, he played accordion, he sang, I don't know what all else there is on it. But, you know, the world could kiss his ass. You know, he was going to, you know, go into his basement somewhere and make records. And they happened to be great.
Yeah.
So he was already in effect. He was doing that, you know, by 1982. You know, Christine sent me a copy. I think it was in 83, he put out a Christmas album. And that has, you know, every damn song on that album is great as far as I'm concerned. And it includes a Christmas song called Party This Christmas.
We're gonna party this Christmas until the New Year's come. We're gonna get on down. We're gonna drop the bomb.
And it's on, you know, the Maison de Soul label or something. I should know what label it's on. But in 1982, he put out a slightly different version of the song on the Ballyhoo label from Lake Charles, Louisiana. And it's fantastic. And I used it this year. So that's one. And then Christine also sent me a 45 by Harry Fontenot. So Harry Fontenot was, you know, from that part of the country, and he used to record with a band called the Cajun Trio. And he recorded for a local label there called Swallow, S-W-A-L-L-O-W, which is just kind of an anglicizing of the proprietor's name. The proprietor is a man of French extraction, Floyd Swallow, S-O-I-L-E-A-U. So when it came time for him to make a record label, he called it Swallow. And, you know, he put out a zillion great records from that part of the country over the course of decades. Also, unless I'm mistaken, he's run a record store. I don't know if the record store is still around, but, you know, I think it's Floyd's Record Shop. So
amazing.
Yeah.
One of the tracks I love on there that's on the sort of more comical side is the Charlie Stewart track, in this vein of songs about all the reasons, you know, Santa can't do his thing this year.
Old Santa Claus won't come this year, got the word today. He was wrapping up some razor blades and shaved his beard away.
Mm-hmm. You know, and his elves went on strike, or he, you know, threw his back out, and all these kind of crazy things that prevent Santa from doing his job.
Mm-hmm.
Where did you find that?
That's a record that's been circulating on various artist compilations for no less than 15 years and maybe longer. And I've always liked it. And I've always kind of been frustrated by the shitty quality of the recording. It's just always sounded terrible. And so I've left it alone. And this past year, I finally heard a version of it that was acceptable. Not great, but acceptable. And I couldn't leave it alone, and so I used it. Now, having said that, again, I'm going to ask for assistance from your listeners, because he turns out to be a tremendously obscure guy. You know, good luck finding out anything about him online, because I promise you, I've tried and I've failed. And I don't know much about the guy at all except this record and the fact that it was cut in 1964. So anybody who can, you know, dig around and tell me more about Charlie Stewart, tell us all, you know, I'd be obliged.
Yeah. Are there any other songs in that kind of vein of look at all the crazy stuff that happened to Santa that come to mind for you that you like?
I don't know. I mean, it's a whole genre. You know, I don't know if I love it so much because of, you know, the predicaments that he puts Santa in. It's just, I kind of like the energy of it. You know, it's kind of a latter day rockabilly record. And he's got a sense of humor, and the thing has got some energy, and he talks about the CIO in there.
Oh, Santa Claus won't come this year, nothing in his sack. His helpers joined the CIO and walked out on a strike. Walked out on a strike.
You know, yeah, he's basically, he's a labor radical, you know. Or at least Santa's elves are labor radicals, so they've gone on strike against Santa. And, you know, that kind of thing. So that's why I used it.
Yeah. And you had a song by Mac Rice, and I didn't know his name.
Now mama in the kitchen cooking, children upstairs asleep. Time for old Santa Claus to make his midnight creep. Y'all, cause Santa Claus wants some loving. Santa Claus wants some loving. Now I know I got some real pretty under that Christmas.
He turns out to have written basically every important soul song in the world. You know, little did I know, even though he didn't record a ton himself, and you have this kind of raunchy Christmas song by him. Yeah, how'd you come across that, and why isn't Mac Rice kind of better known even as a songwriter?
Well, I don't know what to say about that. I mean, you know, I'll say this, you know.
Well, first off, did you know his name before stumbling across this song? I guess we can start
there. Yeah, I knew it because, first of all, understand this, you know, he wrote, let's just give him a little bit of props here. I took notes, Super Sean. So he was born in Clarksdale, Mississippi, and he grew up in Detroit. He wrote Mustang Sally, and he recorded it.
Mustang.
Before it was a hit for Wilson Pickett in the mid-60s, he also wrote Respect Yourself for the Staple Singers.
Respect yourself. Respect yourself. If you don't respect.
He was known not only as Mac Rice, but as Sir Mac Rice, right? He wrote Cheaper to Keep Her for Johnny Taylor.
Son, you're going to pay some alimony, a goose some time. That's why it's cheaper to keep her. Help me say it, y'all. It's cheaper to keep her.
It's cheaper to keep her.
See, when you get this...
Et cetera, et cetera, right? So much better known as a songwriter than as a performer himself. But I think probably I first encountered his name as the composer of this song, Santa Claus Wants Some Lovin', and the version that I heard that was a hit, at least in, you know, Christmas song terms, was a version cut by Albert King in 1973 or 1974, I think. And King kills it.
Mama in the kitchen cooking, and the children upstairs asleep. It's time for old Santa Claus to make his midnight creep. Oh, Santa Claus wants some loving. Yeah, now, Santa Claus wants some loving.
You know, I love it an awful lot. But it happens to be a great song as well. And Stax Records put out a volume of their, you know, a various artist compilation of Christmas songs in, I think, 1982 or 1983. And it included Mac's version of the song that he wrote for Albert. And so now if you go online and you look it up, it says that the track was recorded in 1982. I don't know if that's true. That's when it first surfaced, I believe. But skeptic that I am, I listened to it, and it sounds like it was cut earlier than that. Maybe it only first saw the light of day in 1982. But anyway, you know, it's a tremendously lovable song to me because it's just so kind of everyday. You know, it's Santa Claus, you know, a.k.a. Dad, and it's the night before Christmas, and, you know, he's you know, messing with the tree and getting the toys ready for the kids, right, and whatnot.
Yeah, the kids need their presents tomorrow, but
he's feeling kind of horny, and he wants to make sure he can get down with his wife. He says he wants to get with Mama before she gets that sleep in her eye.
I'm trying to fix this old bicycle, but I can't seem to find my plow, and I'm halfway watching Mama before she get that sleep in her eyes. Oh, Santa Claus wants some loving.
You know. And, you know, the everydayness of it, the poetry of the everyday just kills me. And so I've always loved the, you know, the song itself, and I'm very happy to be able to put it out in the composer's version this year.
Yeah, and Respect Yourself is just one of those odd songs that kind of keeps having new lives as people keep rewriting it, right? You know, you had the Staple Singers did it, and then in late 80s, early 90s, you know, Madonna essentially rewrites it for Express Yourself.
Respect yourself. Da, 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 da. Respect yourself.
Express yourself. You've got to make it. Express yourself. Hey, 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 hey.
And then a year or two ago, Lady Gaga rewrites that for, what was it, Born This Way, I think. So it's just one of these weird songs that people kind of keep rewriting and turning into hits as time goes on.
Well, it's kind of basic, you know, especially if you feel marginalized at all, if you feel downtrodden at all, you know, the admonition to respect yourself is empowering and important. So it's gonna get revived. But along those lines, allow me to talk about a song called I Respect Everyone, which is one of the last songs on the album this year. It's by Jimmy Lewis and Peggy Scott Adams. And I, again, I love it an awful lot. And it kind of, it flips respect yourself, because, you know, as important as that is, it's, you know, as self-empowering as it is, you know, what about the idea that you turn it around and respect other people as well?
Before I leave home every day, I fill my heart with love so I can give it away. I keep a little old light right here in my mind, so if my chance comes, I can let it shine. I respect everyone. I do it every day,
especially on Christmas Day.
Uh-huh.
Especially on Christmas Day.
Tell me what to say.
God damn it. It's just so soulful to me. And these folks do a beautiful job of it. Jimmy Lewis was a guy, you know, this is a whole story. So, you know, you ask, where do I get my records? So my father-in-law lives in Cambridge, Mass. And I spent 4 years in Boston in the late 70s. And at the time, there was a guy named Skippy White. And he had a couple of record stores, and they were very good record stores. You know, there's one left now. There's one left today, his last stand, I guess, after probably 50 years of having record stores in Boston. And it happens to be in Roxbury now, which is, you know, the notable black community in Boston. And so this past summer, I prevailed upon a friend of mine in Cambridge, Betsy Meyer. She went with me, and gee, it was really funky. I remember the store that he ran in the 70s in Central Square, which is not far from Harvard Square. And my memory of it is that it was, you know, kind of, it was orderly. It was a record store. This place out in Roxbury is beat up. I don't know why. It's you know, boxes of records, and it's hard to make your way around. But, you know, I fought my way through the clutter, and I found some Christmas CDs and some Christmas vinyl. And among the Christmas CDs, you know, I had to give a try to the CD. It was a Christmas compilation on a label I'd never heard before called Miss Butch Records. I thought, wow, Miss Butch, eh? And it turns out it's a label run by this guy, Jimmy Lewis. And Jimmy Lewis, you know, in his own way, he's not unlike Mack Rice. You know, he's better known as a songwriter than as a performer himself. He wrote songs for and he produced Ray Charles starting in 1968. And he was a member of the Drifters in the 60s after their great era, right? But he was born in Mississippi, moved to Los Angeles in the late 50s. He dies in 2004 at the age of 66. This album was cut, or at least released, in the year 2000 or 2002, I think. And this song is a duet between him and Peggy Scott Adams. It's, you know, as I said, it's called I Respect Everyone. And Peggy was, you know, a little younger than Jimmy. She toured with Ben E. King as a teenager, and she had hits under her own name starting in the late 60s. And she'd kind of retired from the music business, and Jimmy Lewis brought her back in 1996. And the two of them make this wonderful song, I Respect Everyone.
Wow. And speaking of the Drifters, you have Billy Ward and the Dominoes, which is a group that had two of the greatest singers of the era in it. Neither of whom were Billy Ward.
At the stroke of midnight, on that great holiday, gonna have a ball, and that's not all. I'm gonna chase the blues away. I'll be
ringing in a brand new year.
I'll be
ringing in a brand new year. Gonna dance, take care of an old man while I'm ringing in a brand new year.
Billy Ward and the Dominoes helped launch the careers of both Clyde McFatter of the Drifters and legendary soul singer Jackie Wilson.
Somehow he kept his name on the top of the marquee. I'm
right.
Not quite sure.
Right, right.
It must have been the Money Man or something. I don't know how that happened.
Right, right.
What do you know about that? Like, who were Billy Ward and the Dominoes, and how did he manage to find this amazing vocal talent?
Well, you know, whatever. I'm not an expert on Billy Ward, and really he's best known today because, you know, among others, he had Jackie Wilson singing lead for him. And as a matter of fact, this is so crazy. So this track this year is called Ringing in a Brand New Year. It happens to be the B-side of Christmas in Heaven. Christmas in Heaven features this soaring, magnificent lead vocal by Jackie Wilson. And, you know, so both those records came out in 1953, and there's a reason that Christmas in Heaven swamped the B-side. In this case, the A-side won, okay? Sorry, Chuck D. The B-side didn't win this time, okay?
Right. The B-side wins again and again and again.
But, you know, I only came across Ringing in a Brand New Year. I bought a flea market compilation of Domino's singles, the best of Billy Ward and the Domino's this year. And this song, Ringing in a Brand New Year, was on it. And I thought it was charming. So
yeah,
and the lead singer, by the way, it's just as well he remains anonymous because he's not a great singer. He's got his charm, but you know, does he really have vocal chops? Not too much.
So every year on your compilation, I run across some soul singer I hadn't heard before who is incredible. This year is Joe Johnson.
He brought me misery. He brought me misery. So this Christmas, Santa, bring my baby back to me.
Common enough name that it's hard to find information about him. And the title of the song is common, too. I thought it was going to be Santa, bring my baby back to me.
Oh, Santa, hear my plea. Santa, bring my baby back to me.
Santa, bring my baby back to me.
The Christmas tree is ready. Candles all aglow, but with my baby.
But it's not. It's an entirely different song. What grabbed you about it? What were you able to kind of dig up about Joe Johnson, if anything? Did you know him going into finding the song?
Well, look, I mean, I agree with you that it's a wonderful song, and he happens to be a wonderful singer, and I think he probably wrote the song as well. It came out in 1966. I researched him as best as I could. He turns out to be pretty obscure. I mean, he did some recording, not a lot. It looks like he was probably out of Louisiana. And other than that, who the hell knows? Maybe the more interesting story, at least to me, is how I found out about him. And there's a guy named Freddie Fresh, and Freddie's based in Minneapolis. And hip-hoppers will know Freddie because he did some of the first extensive hip-hop discographies. And you can still find those online. That's Freddie Fresh.
Son of your people to call me Johnny Rotten. But people keep calling me Freddie Fresh.
Freddie Fresh is a musician, DJ, and producer. In 2004, he released the book Freddie Fresh Presents the Rap Records, which covers the history of the early independent old-school rap scene and provides an extensive catalog of rap releases from 1979 to 1989.
He happens to be a mental case record collector, and he runs a record store, I think, in Minneapolis. And, you know, I've been friends with him for quite a while. And this year he sent me, he emailed me the files of several Christmas records, and one of them was this thing by Joe Johnson. And I thought, damn, it's really great. I mean, it's sad. You know, Santa Claus brought me misery, you know, because, you know, his baby went away. But he sings it, and, you know, I mean, so it's kind of a typical sentiment, but, you know, he'll rip your heart out. I believe he's in misery, you know?
Yeah, it's a beautiful song. And one of the last ones I wanted to bring up was the Swan Silver Tones.
Oh, good.
A little child, Jesus, surely had to be born. Oh, yes, he did. I heard him say, there's no room, no room. In our room, in the end, there ain't no room for your child to be born.
And that whole era of kind of 1950s gospel before all of the talented singers realized the money was in R&B and went secular.
Uh-oh.
Is just that whole era is gorgeous. Who were the Swan Silvertones and where did they fit in that hierarchy of kind of that era of gospel groups?
I think they were you know, stars. I mean, they were founded by a singer named Claude Jeter in West Virginia. They began recording in the 1940s. This track, Great Day in September, is cut in 1956, and it's a rewrite of a fairly standard gospel song called No Room at the Inn.
Oh, they want no room, no room at the inn. Oh, no room, no room at the inn.
And they put a new name on it. It took us
off. Okay, I thought I recognized some of the words and stuff. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. You know, I think they toured extensively. They recorded extensively. You know, they were stars on the gospel circuit, certainly. Claude Jeter is a magnificent singer. I think he sings lead on this track. And the song, by the way, the thing is basically a cappella. There's a guitar strumming on it.
Which you can barely hear. Yeah, it's way, way in the background.
Right, right, right. But mostly it's you know, this beautiful harmony singing and Claude Jeter killing it with his falsetto vocal. And it turns out, I know I only found this online, boys and girls. I don't know if it's true, but they say that Paul Simon credited the Swan Silvertones with inspiring him to write Bridge Over Troubled Water. And guess what? Don't hold it against them.
Simon was introduced to the Swan Silvertones music in the mid-1960s. One improvised line toward the end of the group's recording of Oh Mary, Don't You Weep inspired him to write Bridge Over Troubled Water, this one.
Baby, I'll be your bridge over deep water if you trust in my name. Oh, I'll be your rock in a wheel.
Simon paid Silvertones lead singer Claude Jeter $1,000 and invited Jeter to sing on his 1973 album, There Goes Rhymin' Simon, on Take Me to the Mardi Gras.
Take your burdens to the Mardi Gras. Mm-hmm. Let the music wash your soul.
Let it wash your soul.
You can jingle in the street. You can jingle to the beat of a jelly roll.
Ooh. You know, to me, I prefer... You know, Great Day in December to Bridge Over Troubled Water.
Is there anything we haven't hit on here that you know, particularly notable to
you? Yes.
What's that?
There are two things that I want to advise people. Please check out the videos on these things because I saw both of them off of YouTube and then managed to find better sounding versions of it. First of all, there's this track by some Dominicans. The guy's name is Alberto Diaz, and he's got a group called Sensacion. And the song is called Navidad con Lechon. And, you know, the song is high energy and it's wonderful. The video is a killer because, you know, it looks like they pulled it off of, you know, local television in Santo Domingo and...
Oh, is this where they're all sort of dancing in front of microphones and there's one woman who sort of doesn't know the words and they have close-ups
exactly
on
right.
her?
Yeah. There's no woman on the record.
Right.
There is no woman singing on the record. But when you do something live, it's so hilarious to see this thing because you've got these three singers, right? Three guys, of course. And, you know, they couldn't be more covered up, okay? They're wearing trench coats down to their ankles and sunglasses, right? And then there's this woman who appears to be
shorts
wearing...
And,
No. She's wearing a bathing suit and thigh-high boots, yeah. Right? And she's curvy as hell, and she's magnificent. And, you know, I don't even know if she's... Truthfully, I don't know if she's that comfortable in that role. I mean, she sings into the mic. The mics are dead. They're lip-syncing, okay?
She doesn't even really move her lips.
But she does move her hips, and,
right.
And she's the star of the show. Believe that. You know, I mean, if you're moved by that kind of thing,
right.
I must say. And it's very funny because there's no musical reason for her to be there. But you're happy to see her. nonetheless. Okay, so that's so I recommend that video to everybody. And then likewise, there's a video, there's a song on here called Santa Was a Freak Like Me. Done by these guys, Pokey and Tyree Neal. They're also known as the Louisiana Blues Brothers, right? And the video is so lovable. You know, they recorded it, you know, I guess they're in Louisiana somewhere, somewhere out in the country. You know, it just seems like small town, you know, it's a black community. And they made the video for, you know, somewhere between, you know, $1.98 and $3.67, okay? They did not spend a lot of money. They're driving around, you know, a circle in some convertible cars, and then every once in a while they're going to cut to people dancing in a local nightclub. And nobody is a movie star. These are some middle-aged folks, and, you know, they're not glamorous-looking. They're not L.A. fit. This is just, you know, these are just some local folks who, you know, live in the community, and they made a recording about Christmas, and then they're going to make a video as well. And again, I love the everydayness of it. I love, you know, they're just going to be themselves. And in particular, I was knocked out by the women, because this is a song about, you know, this is Santa Was a Freak Like Me. He's looking for who's naughty. He don't care about nice, okay? And it's not really a smutty song, but it's a sexy song. And as I said, there are no women singing on it, and yet when you cut away to the nightclub, it's a room full of women, you know, local women, and they're playing along with these ridiculous men, you know? They're just going along with it in the most good-natured way. And it's beautiful to me. The video is a knockout. And, you know, I like the song as well, of course.
Yeah. And Josh and I have had sort of an ongoing discussion leading up to you coming here about bad Christmas songs. And so we wanted to ask the expert. Josh's vote goes for the Dominic the Donkey Christmas song, if you know that one.
Hey, jingity-jing, it's Dominic the Donkey, jingity-jing, the Italian Christmas donkey.
Lou Monty's, yeah, Josh's vote is for Lou Monty's Dominic the Donkey as the worst, you know, reasonably well-known Christmas song of all time. And I guess we were curious as to your vote.
You know, it's not something I tabulate. I mean, you know, I understand why it's fun, but really I spend the whole year diving through innumerable, terrible Christmas songs, you know, trying not to infect myself, and just, you know, hearing enough of it to push it aside. You know, it's really, there are an infinite number of terrible Christmas songs. You know, nobody wins. There's no, in my opinion, there's no single worst Christmas song. You know, there, really the challenge for me every year is just to find 50 or 55 minutes worth of Christmas songs that I love, that aren't cheesy, that aren't terrible. And it's not easy. And I understand, you know, some folks, you know, there really is a subculture of folks who make what you might call alternative Christmas mixtapes every year. And they do it because they're motivated in the same way I was. You know, the motivation is, God dog, you know, do I have to listen to the same 20 terrible songs over and over again just because it's Christmas? Let me figure out another way to go. And what a lot of these folks do is turn towards novelties. The idea is, I think, to the extent that, you know, they'll think about it, the idea is that most Christmas songs, the most familiar Christmas songs, are much, much too earnest. Mm-hmm. Too somber, too devout. And so given that, if I'm going to make an alternative soundtrack, I'm going to turn to something that's fun, and I'm going to turn to the novelties, and I'm going to turn to comedy. And okay. So, you know, whatever. That's the way some people go. The problem for me is this. Novelties wear themselves out pretty quickly. You know, you listen to it once. Okay. You get the joke. Done. You know, I want to put together a CD every year that sustains repeated listening. You know, if there's a, you know, if I succeed and there's some goofy novelty in the middle of it, you know, it ruins the whole flow. I don't care about that. That's not how I'm bent. You know, to the extent that it's possible, I'm going to try and find, you know, 55 minutes worth of wonderful, soulful Christmas music every year, at least to my taste. Not everybody's going to agree with me, but, you know, I do manage to satisfy myself at the very least every year.
And that sounds like a great note to end on, Bill. Thanks for visiting us again this Christmas.
Thanks for inviting me. I'm telling you, this is Christmas Day for me, just being able to talk about this stuff.
As you heard, for Bill, talking about the Christmas Jollies with us every year is kind of like Christmas for him. And it is for us, too. Not only are we introduced to all kinds of new music, but finding out the stories about how the songs came to appear on the mix always leads some fascinating places. As I mentioned up top, you can hear this year's Christmas Jollies for yourself exclusively on our SoundCloud page at soundcloud.com/TheCipherShow. Another thing that's great about these episodes is that we end up talking to Bill about all kinds of stuff. Like Atlanta. We at The Cipher definitely agree it's a phenomenal show. Josh swears he has watched the Montague episode of that show a dozen times.
Good evening and welcome to Montague. I'm your host, Franklin Montague.
You can listen to our past Christmas episodes with Bill for stories about his time on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Induction Committee and the backstory behind how his pictures ended up in the Smithsonian. Join us next week when we bring longtime friend of the Cipher, Adam Mansbach, to the show. Adam wrote the screenplay for the new movie Barry, a film about Barack Obama in his college years. The movie's been getting rave reviews and award nominations, including an NAACP Image Award nom for Adam himself. You can watch Barry now on Netflix. To make sure you hear each episode of The Cipher as soon as it drops, subscribe on iTunes or your podcast app of choice. Once you do that, you'll also be able to check out our back catalog. If you enjoy this show, for example, you can find last year's Christmas special with Bill Adler at episode 134. If you use iTunes, it's hugely important to give us a rating and a review. It helps us bring more fans and attention to the show. Also consider helping us out by becoming a patron. Visit us at patreon.com/TheCipherShow and sign up. Bringing you a show every week takes a lot of time and effort from me and Josh, and we really need your support to continue to maintain this level of output. If even a quarter of our listeners contributed just $1 a month, it would go a long way towards making the show sustainable. As an added bonus for our patrons, we try monthly to share some bonus material that sometimes comes out when talking to our guests after the main interview is over. For January, we have something very special planned for you. Become a patron by December 31st to get access to the file. If you want to talk to me or Josh about the show, visit us on social media. We're at The Cipher Show on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Tumblr. Let us know what you thought of this episode and who you'd like to see on the show in the future. More information about anything related to the podcast, playlists, our complete archives, and more can be found for free at thecyphershow.com. The Cipher is created and written by Sean Sataro.
But he's feeling kind of horny.
The show is produced and engineered by Josh Cross at Crosstown Studios.
Right there in Rain, Louisiana.
Our music is by 42 Ghosts.
You know, the world could kiss his ass. You know, he was going to, you know, go into his basement somewhere and make records.
Our web guru is Aaron Young.
This is the nerdiest shit in the world, so forgive me, you know. But
special thanks to Patreon supporter Ryan Frizzell.
I think probably I first encountered his name as the composer.
We'll see you next time around on The Cipher.
Oh, shit. Oh, shit.